Hi, it's Radhika Jones, Editor-in-Chief of Vanity Fair. As we gear up for award season, there's no better time to join us. By becoming a Vanity Fair subscriber, you'll gain exclusive access to our in-depth coverage of film, television, and the best of Hollywood. And that's just the beginning. Vanity Fair takes you inside the worlds of entertainment, culture, politics, and scandal, bringing you iconic images, era-defining stories, and much more. Get 15% off a year of digital access to Vanity Fair by visiting vanityfair.com and using promo code POD15 at checkout. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15, for 15% off a full year of insights and exclusive digital access. Subscribe now.
Hello and welcome to Little Gold Men, the award season podcast from Vanity Fair and Panoply. It is the week after the Oscars and we are still going talking about the Oscars and what an Oscars it is to discuss. I'm Katie Rich, the deputy editor of VanityFair.com. I'm here with Vanity Fair's digital director, Mike Hogan.
Hello.
Sorry.
Is that
I was trying to do something different. That was Lionel Richie.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Hello.
Way back. Also on the phone, Joanna Robinson, Vanity Fair senior writer.
Hi, Katie. I'm sorry, I'm not singing.
It's a little anticlimactic, Joanna.
I know.
I might want to try a little harder.
And Vanity Fair's film critic, Richard Lawson.
Hello.
So guys, I think we were going to try to use this episode to move on to maybe looking at the year ahead and making some bold predictions for next year. But there's still too much to talk about from this year's Oscars. The fallout from Envelope Gate, or whatever you want to call it, continues. There's an article in The Hollywood Reporter today as we record this where producer Mike DeLuca said it was the Hindenburg, which is...
Yeah.
A lot.
That's about right.
When we talked about this last early Monday morning, I think PricewaterhouseCoopers had released an apology, but we've learned so much since then. Joanna, what's the best detail you think has come from all of this?
It's got to be that the PricewaterhouseCooper accountant, who was responsible for handing the wrong envelope to Warren Beatty, tweeted a photo of Emma Stone just before he did it.
Yeah.
And then deleted all of his tweets after he was told not to tweet from backstage. And he tweeted like a photo of the briefcase with the envelopes and a photo of Viola Davis and a photo of Emma Stone. So he was starstruck backstage at the Oscars and wound up, I'm going to put it all on him, wound up causing the biggest snafu in Oscar history.
Honestly, there's no other choice. That's the right choice.
Wait. No, but the fact that it's emerged since then that he is a self-described Matt Damon lookalike. And
I know, that's my favorite detail about him, because a lot of people were making Matt Damon jokes because of the whole Jimmy Kimmel Matt Damon feud. So they're like, because the guy bears like a passing resemblance to a Matt Damon who has maybe not had Hollywood take care of him his whole life. like someone was like, oh, it's Matt Damon in disguise trying to, you know, foul up Jimmy Kimmel, or someone's saying it's Matt Damon's Looper from the future come back to like
it's the fact that the guy like rides on the lookalike thing, like if he
yeah, but you know what, okay, there is an epidemic in our society.
Oh my god.
Okay, and this is reflective of it. Everybody being so unbelievably thirsty for attention. Mm-hmm. Because everyone's afraid that they have to create their own personal brand. That
yep.
They can't. It's not enough to just do your job anymore. You have to be seen in public doing your job all the time. Anyway,
yep.
That's the epidemic.
Yeah.
And especially in LA, everybody you meet is like, are you building your personal brand enough? Like, why aren't you tweeting pictures of people
backstage?
You just
got back from 10 days in LA. I can see it really had an impact on
no,
you.
No, I mean, it does.
Yeah.
And if you read Rebecca Keegan's newsletter yesterday, she said Gary Natoli, who is the stage manager of the Oscars, whom she describes affectionately as a human Xanax, he usually hands out the envelopes, but
yes.
This year, Brian Cullinan decided, well, wait a minute, I'm the Matt Damon lookalike who needs to be tweeting pictures and handing out the envelopes because everyone needs to see that I'm the Pricewaterhouse accountant and this is my time to shine, and how else am I going to build my personal brand? Well, you now have a personal brand for the rest of your life as the guy
ignominy.
Who did the Hindenburg at the Oscars.
I do have to say the Academy later reached out to Rebecca and said that even though she has seen that guy with the envelopes, that according to the Academy, he was just checking the envelopes in the past and that the accountants have already done it.
Oh, okay.
The logic there is a little
right,
fuzzy,
well,
but Rebecca saw what she
one
saw.
One quarter
so.
Of the way.
Yeah, no, this guy clearly really stepped in it.
But I feel like they should give that job to the stage manager now. I feel like...
I feel like they're going to give the job to like four stage managers and like four people will check the envelopes
yeah.
to make sure that they're the right
I keep
one.
Thinking that... Well, I know there's a security issue, but I keep thinking the envelopes thing is just not the way to go anymore. Maybe it should be a digital envelope. I don't know.
There an iPad?
If it's
on the teleprompter, it's going to get hacked.
Yeah, that's there's true. A very good reason not to do the teleprompter. Basically, with the envelopes, like two people see it. Those accountants have seen the envelopes. They memorized the list, which was a fascinating thing that I learned. Both of those people knew that Moonlight had won Best Picture. So the minute it was announced, they knew that it was the wrong one, which again makes you wonder why it took 2.5 minutes to correct it.
If you want to keep an award secret, write it down in a piece of paper and give it to somebody personally, okay?
Two other details. It's getting like creepy good now. Two of my other favorite details are, if you watch the tape again, the last La La Land producer to give his speech clearly gives his speech after he already realized that they had lost, which I didn't realize at first. And like, I don't know, what would you do?
Well, Richard, you were asking on Twitter, like, why Jordan Horowitz became kind of this folk hero for what he did. And I thought it was because that second producer, I think it's Mark Platt, I don't want to misidentify him, that he started speaking knowing that they had lost and was kind of like, I don't know what he was really going for. And that then Jordan Horowitz stepped in to set the record straight. That was where I thought he really kind of shone.
Yeah. I'm just joining you guys from the bathroom, Christine Lottie style. So that's why you haven't heard my voice.
You won Best Actress, Richard.
Thanks. I think there's been some controversy because Damien Chazelle and Barry Jenkins are on the cover of Variety, their post-Oscar thing. So there's been a lot of talk about like, oh, you know, La La Land seems to have still kind of won, even though it didn't win. And
oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And in the conversation, and certainly, you know, Ira Madison at MTV and other writers who write about Black culture a lot are like, wait, Moonlight won, guys. Like why are we talking about this white hero who like did the decent thing of, oh, I didn't win, here's your award. You know, so I think there's some controversy, it seems, right now about whether or not.
But here we go again. I think that Moonlight got screwed. They should have had the moment to stand alone.
La La Land got screwed.
But let's not punish the guy who did the right thing turn him into some race villain.
I don't think anyone's punishing him. I think it's not him particularly. It's just like the coverage of him.
But it's still okay to say a good thing happened here, like a rare for the first time in 6 months, an actual human behaved in a good way. Like you can talk about it without being racist. I'm pretty sure. I could be wrong.
But the headlines are like the hero of the Oscars is Jordan. A lot of the headlines became about Jordan Horowitz, and corny. I don't think that's right.
The hero we need right now.
Yeah, no, that was literally a headline, which is like, come on.
And that's what people are reacting to, not that he did a good thing.
More a media critique.
Yeah. Although, I think the perspective that La La Land also won, I mean, like last year...
got six Oscars. Well, and it won Best Director.
That's the thing, is like Damien Chazelle won Best Director. I mean, like last year, you think about The Revenant and Spotlight. Everyone remembers that Spotlight won Best Picture, probably, but I think a lot of people still think about The Revenant. Like, this happens when you split picture and director in this way. Yeah.
When Ira Madison from MTV was talking about this Variety cover that went up last night of Damien Chazelle and Barry Jenkins, both in their suits, both holding their Oscars on the cover, he was like, this is disappointing, this reframing of the narrative. And then Barry Jenkins, who like knows Ira, sort of started tweeting at him. And he's like, listen, I was actually the guest on this cover. Usually it's the Best Director solo cover. It's been Alfonso Cuarón. And last year it was Chivos, because that was sort of like the story. It wasn't Spotlight. It was Chivos, who was not a director, but like still it's historically a director. Inarritu's been on there. So for Barry to be on there is sort of breaking of a tradition to share the cover with someone.
I think Barry has been the real hero of class throughout this whole thing. Barry, he's the one who tweeted about Jordan, thinking about this, realizing what level of presence and class
and
he showed.
Did that like on the way to our party, probably.
Right.
Like it was like very soon after the Oscars. Barry, I think, has had, we talk about like, he's our personal friend, although he was on the podcast. No, he just like really did it right in this horrible situation. I mean, I think everyone did it right. Like Damien was pretty quiet after the Oscars, and I think sharing that cover with Barry was a good move for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Well, actually, Katie, also, if someone is on our podcast, they are our best friend forever.
No, exactly. Well,
you mean our best friend, Andy Garfield?
That's what I've been telling you.
I mean, Andy Garfield. I told you that I saw Isabel dancing in our party, and she said, tell Richard hello.
Oh, good.
Bonjour.
Yeah, no, I think ultimately, you know, if you look at this in a vacuum, everyone did the right thing, and everyone did it gracefully and kindly. And
except for the Matt Damon look-like accountant guy.
Him aside.
He's a villain.
He should burn in hell. But yeah, I think there's been a little bit of a tweak, you know, sort of in the media to kind of try to, you know, pump up Horowitz a little bit more than maybe is necessary. But again, like you said, Mike, maybe we are just reacting to the fact that, like, oh, look, someone did something decent. Like,
yeah.
Which feels rare right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, no, the fact that he's like, I'm proud to give this to my friends from Moonlight. Yeah. Like,
it was a very nice moment. The guy did a good thing.
And like, it's also, you know, like, you put yourself in that situation, and all you can imagine is yourself doing the most horrible thing. Running off stage with the Oscar, crying, like,
giving your speech, even though you know you haven't
won. Yeah, I don't blame. Look, I mean, I was nervous doing our live stream in front of it. Turned out a good number of people, but not 38 million people. And in fact, I think we talked about this, but Leslie Mann said on the live stream she had been told before she went out that there were 700 million people watching. That's a lie, but who knows?
That's, you know what I mean? Around the world. Every year.
It might be around the world. It might be a huge, really huge number. And it's like, you know, in show business, the show must go on until you know what's happening. Just keep going. And so it was also kind of a, you know, I don't want to turn Jordan Horowitz into a saint or anything, but the fact that he actually did put the brakes on and be like, wait a minute.
Well, somebody had to.
Yeah.
And, like, no one else was.
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And to his credit, he isn't doing any of these interviews. Like, he is stepping out of the spotlight. He didn't want an Oscar. You know, I think even that has been a good move on his
part.
He did tweet, like, an animated GIF of him and Barry Jenkins hugging that someone made. Not like a cartoon GIF that someone drew of the two of them. So.
Wow.
And he has a halo and is actually an angel wing in the in the picture, but it's fine.
He's been given the Nobel Peace Prize, which I think is an overstep by Sweden. But
so we talked about how Moonlight didn't get its moment. Should we give Moonlight its moment right now? I don't think we talk about this enough in our post-Oscar episode. So Richard, Joanna, we all had a listener kind of tweet an article he wrote at us about kind of like figuring out how he predicted Moonlight correctly. I think that's a really interesting way to look into how it won.
Yeah, he's this film critic, a young guy named Daniel Joyot, I believe is how you pronounce his name. He has this great, interesting, compelling theory about, with the preferential ballot system, why Moonlight might have won. Joanna, what was the kind of math there? How had he figured it out? Because you read it too.
He used this to correctly predict Spotlight last year too.
And his website is thirdmanmovies.blogspot.com, just if you want to look up this article yourself.
Right. So the way he explained it is the way the preferential ballot works is if you've got a close race, like between Moonlight and La La Land, and so neither clears 50% of the number one spot in the first round of voting, the next thing that happens is
so you have to win more than 50%. You have to be number one on more than 50% of ballots to win Best Picture outright.
So the next thing that happens is that the ballots that had the movie with the least number of votes, so let's say the least popular movie that was, you know, voted for this year was Hidden Figures. Let's say that was like a low Hidden Figures and Fences.
And Hell or High Water.
He also named Hell or High Water.
Since they had the lowest number of nominations total.
Right. So those are the three least likely to be anyone's number one choice. So on those ballots where Hidden Figures, Hell or High Water, and Fences are the number one spot, those get knocked out in the number two choice from those ballots
becomes
the number one. So the way you can try to figure out what the tiebreaker will be is by looking at those low likely movies and what those people would likely vote for as their second choice. This is very complicated, very interesting.
Yeah.
So he says,
smart.
Now try and get in the heads of the people that think that those three are the best films of the year. What might they think is second best? All three films are character-driven dramas about social justice. Two are indies, two are about African Americans. For all three films, it seems far more likely that their vote would gravitate more towards Moonlight being higher on their ballots than they would La La Land. And he did a similar thing for Spotlight last year where he said, what do we think the taste of the people who would rank Bridge of Spies, Brooklyn, and Room as the best film of the year? That they like quiet, measured art house dramas, and that means the majority of those folks would likely reallocate to Spotlight rather than The Big Short. And so, yeah, I'm like, that's brilliant. I didn't understand that about preferential ballots. I think we've got an interesting metric. Should we have a close race again next year?
And he lays it out really well. Again, it's Third Man Movies, Daniel Joyot. He lays it out clearly, succinctly. Who knows if it's right? It sounds right to me.
I mean, you're obviously speculating a lot and making a lot of assumptions. About people, but I mean, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And, you know, I think we spoke about it briefly on the Monday episode that, like, in terms of predicting and the sort of game that we're in, this Best Picture thing, we do have to really start thinking about it in a different way, you know, because it does work very differently.
But the key insight here, which I had never thought of, is that it's much more valuable to be the second choice of people who choose the worst movie of the year.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
But then the second worst, best movie. Yeah,
not
yeah.
worst, but the kind of the most hopeless, let's put it that
the stragglers.
Way.
Stragglers. Like,
so that's a secret asset.
Being second place to the La La Land voters is useless.
Doesn't matter.
It's really who's second place in the first ones that get eliminated. And there's a threshold of, what is it, 51% or something?
Yeah.
Wherever the threshold is, like, they're not going to eliminate all the movies, generally speaking. They're going to start from the bottom and move up.
They probably only get through like one or two rounds. I mean, realistically, it's not like it's going to go, you know, so deep, but like it's probably they eliminate two ballots or whatever.
It could be four or five, but yeah, interesting. It's the Drake factor. Started from the bottom. Sorry, I'm going to commit suicide right now.
Oh, your love of Canadian music has undone you once again.
I'll see you in Toronto.
This is the perfect time for me to send my apologies to Mike Hogan. On Monday, early in the morning, you graciously, well, you didn't need to apologize, but, you know, you said that you had sort of talked me out of Moonlight as Best Picture. And I want to say that I apologize for dismissing your love of that Justin Timberlake song, because it has been stuck in my head ever since the Oscars. It's a great song. You're right. I was wrong.
All right. I'm quitting this podcast.
Everyone else disagrees with both of us. But thank you, Joanna, for joining my little pod of now two.
So I'm looking back at our Oscar predictions, which I think, you know, the morning after the Oscars, I think we all had kind of a morning after the election feeling, different emotions, but like, how did we get it so wrong? We were all wrong. And as Mike accurately predicted, this is a year for everyone to predict things incorrectly, because I don't know, the moon is in the seventh house or something.
Yeah.
But we actually did better on our group predictions. I think on this podcast, we might have gone all over the place. It was a wider ranging discussion. But we predicted La La Land would win Best Picture, but we accurately predicted all four of the acting categories.
By the way, I want to say La La Land kind of did win Best Picture. No. Can I just say that, everybody? Everyone out there?
I, a white man, would like you to know.
As a white male, I'd like to point out it practically won.
Oh, boy.
Sorry.
We got the screenplay categories right. We got cinematography. We missed film editing. We thought that would be La La Land. It went to Hacksaw Ridge.
Yeah.
We can talk about that. That was an
all the editing. The sound mixing and sound editing is when I knew La La Land was really, like, in trouble.
But did you really think it wasn't going to win Best Picture?
No.
Yeah, it's really.
I still thought it would win Best Picture.
Yeah, it was.
But it was.
It was not having the kind of like coronation night that it's.
Yeah, I figured it would. I mean, I thought if it was going real well, it would have won both of those. And if it was going as well as we figured, it would have won one. And when it won neither, I'm like, moo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It didn't win costume design. We predicted Jackie. I thought it might be La La Land, but it was meant to Colleen Atwood for Fantastic Beasts.
Never. No, she's won like seven Oscars. I know. Like, we should never.
I know.
And Joanna called that
Joanna predicted on the podcast.
Yeah, she did.
We predicted Star Trek Beyond for makeup, and it went to Suicide Squad.
Well, I just. And several
Which
of you
Joanna
need to leave the country now.
Wrong on the podcast, and now has to
move
to Uruguay.
Yeah, no, I'm moving to Uruguay with Barry Jenkins, Andrew Garfield. There's a bunch of us from this podcast.
We're all, Damien Chazelle.
Yeah, we're starting a colony.
And the Oscars are just going to be owned communally.
Kevin O'Connell's going to do our sound mixing down there.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. Well, Kevin O'Connell, hey, he has an Oscar now. He doesn't need anything to do
Colleen
with
Atwood
anymore.
Will just personally stitch all the clothes.
She's made me some nice pants. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think we should note that even though we went 2 for 3 on our shorts predictions, which is still pretty good given that the shorts are so dang hard to predict.
And it was a really hard, weird year for
them. Yeah. Mike personally got them all right.
On Gold Derby. That's literally the only thing I can say that's good.
What was the one that we diverged on?
Sing.
Sing. Yeah. Oh, right. Sing. Of course.
But
yes.
In fairness, I had originally had Watani for a long time, and then I realized that literally no one else on planet Earth agreed with me, so I switched to White Helmets.
It's still the best one.
It's still the best one.
Yeah. I don't think I told you guys this, but I saw the White Helmets producer changing her dress in the bathroom at the Vanity Fair party while her friends had her Oscar outside.
I love it.
It was fantastic.
Is that nice. Netflix's first Oscar?
Oh, God.
For like an original thing. I think it might be.
Yeah, I thought Netflix and Amazon
both got their first
Oscars.
Wow. Yeah. They Amazon with Manchester.
Your next crackle.
Better Google it, because every time we make a mistake, we get like 400 tweets.
I know. I was so sorry that I forgot to spotlight only won two Oscars, guys.
I will say,
it
thank
was
you.
6 in the morning. Yeah.
Thank you, everyone, for tweeting at us during the show.
I mean, my God.
It was
God.
Nice to
yeah.
see a lot of listeners, you know, engaging and telling me to move to Uruguay. And, you know, like, it was fun.
Yeah. No, all the callbacks were really
move
fantastic.
Move to Uruguay.
CNN.com says historic victories for ESPN, Netflix, and Amazon. So Netflix, ESPN too, with their doc.
Oh,
so TV really is taking over. I mean,
yeah. So movie industry is doing great, everybody. I want to go back to Moonlight for a second, because Richard, I was talking to you yesterday about how the win for Moonlight, it's the first LGBTQ film, which is a weird descriptor, but
picture.
Like, so the first the film with an LGBTQ character in the center to win. And it's the first by a black writer slash director, like who wrote and directed both. But 12 Years a Slave obviously had a black director and a separate person who was a writer who was black. But it also has this weird distinction of being two films by black directors that did not win Best Director. There's still never been a black Best Director winner.
Which is that right?
It's crazy. Yeah.
Never.
Steve McQueen, I believe, lost
to Alfonso
Cuarón.
But just to go back real quick to the, that really shows that the different way of voting, right? Because Best Picture's done by the preferential ballot.
Yeah.
And Best Director's just done by the straight majority. Who got the most votes. Yeah. So in all likelihood, La La Land had the most votes, but not enough. And that's when you start pulling up. So I think that's very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at Hacksaw Ridge, I said this on Monday, but I'll say it again, like Hacksaw Ridge winning Best Editing and Chazelle winning Best Director, and then Moonlight still prevailing in Best Picture. It's like that is preferential system benefits. And I think, you know, I think that that's fine. I think it benefits.
But, you know, and you had said Hacksaw Ridge might have been,
I wonder
know,
if some of the oldest voters had Hacksaw 1, La La Land 2, and thus kind of chipped away at La La Land's, you know,
that's interesting.
Number one votes.
Yeah, if La La Land was the second favorite of Hacksaw Ridge voters and Hacksaw Ridge got a lot of votes, that's actually bad for La La Land.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's very
I thought Manchester would be more of a factor in all of this. But I mean, who knows? Maybe it was. We're all just kind of guessing about how these preferential ballots work.
The other metric about Moonlight's historic win is that it's the first film with an all-black cast to win an Oscar.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think what that means is that it's missing that sort of white savior element that we often see in films about African-Americans that get into the Oscar race.
Yeah.
And so that there are no white characters, savior or otherwise, in this film. It's just about the batch experience.
That's why we had to have Jordan Horowitz.
Yes.
He's the Emma Stone of this help.
Yeah. Thank goodness. We almost made it through without a white savior.
Although,
I'm doing it now after complaining about it.
It is worth saying that 12 Years a Slave does not, I mean, 12 Years a Slave has white characters who are not monsters like Michael Fassbender's character, but it does not fall into the white savior trope. I think it's important. I mean, Brad Pitt sort of rescues him from slavery in the end.
Canadian Saint.
Producer Brad Pitt,
Brad Pitt
well, cast himself.
I have an idea for what my character can be. I'll be
producer
a
Brad Pitt also was behind Moonlight, though.
That's true.
I actually don't know why he wasn't on the famous envelope that Jordan Horowitz held up, because he Plan B produced Moonlight.
Well, because they limit the amount of producers, right?
Oh, is that
so
what
maybe
it is?
He wasn't.
Well, that was another interesting thing of the Hollywood Reporter thing, is that Plan B's other producer, Dini Gardner, was not at the ceremony.
Yeah.
And they won't really say why.
Oh, boy. The drama from these Oscars.
The other producers were asked why she wasn't there, and they're like, she's our partner. But like, didn't say why she wasn't there. Yeah. So that's a mystery.
So I think this no black Best Director winner thing is going to become embarrassing real fast. I think that's something that
it's already embarrassing,
but I think it's going to become the focus.
I hope so.
You know, Moonlight winning is obviously this enormous accomplishment, but it's high time for a black person to win Best Director.
Yeah, well, we have, you know, Dee Reese, who directed Mudbound, that was a big hit at Sundance coming down the pike, so maybe that'll be something.
I kind of feel like Ava DuVernay is really well positioned to do this. I don't know that A Wrinkle in Time is going to be the big Oscar. Who knows?
Yeah,
I'm
know.
Psyched
yeah.
about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do feel like that narrative is going to pick up steam.
Yeah, and should.
Maybe it'd be Barry Jenkins. Who knows?
Yeah, he just can't wait 8 years to make his next movie.
I don't think he would prefer to wait 8 years either. Yeah. Damien Chazelle and Ryan Gosling already have that Neil Armstrong movie coming like next year, so get ready for them to be back in the fray.
Oh, boy. And Emma Stone's playing the moon, is that right?
Oh, my God. You're the best, Richard. You're just the best. Steve McQueen has Widows coming, right?
Oh, he does? I was wondering what Steve McQueen's up
to. That movie sounds fascinating.
What is it?
Yeah.
It's a remake of a British miniseries, I believe, Joanna. Is that right?
Yeah, TV show.
About criminals who die and then their wives decide to finish the crime for them.
Oh, my God.
And it's Viola Davis and Cynthia Erivo from The Color Purple.
Andre Holland,
I think, is playing one of the widows. So I think he's like a gay twist. There's somebody else who's been cast.
It looks like Daniel, I'm going to mispronounce his last name, Kaluuya, who is the star of Get Out.
Oh,
the number one movie of the weekend.
Oh, he's great.
And then Gillian Flynn from Gone Girl is writing it.
That's right.
Jeez.
It was like a 70s TV show that Steve McQueen like grew up loving.
Widows.
Yeah, I had never heard of it, but it's this female-fronted sort of like 70s badass ladies doing crime show that he watched on British television.
Also on the IMDb list are Michelle Rodriguez and Elizabeth Debicki. So
I mean, that's an amazing
that's
cast.
An incredible
yeah.
cast.
That's incredible.
So I don't know if it's if it's like Oscar friendly, but you know,
it's Richard friendly.
So I'm here to talk to you about hashtag tripod. It's an effort that we're making all of this month to help people tell their friends about podcasts that they would love. There are a lot of people who still don't really get podcasts. We love that you guys listen to this, and obviously we have a lot of podcasts we love ourselves, but we want to spread the word. So right now we want to ask you to think of someone, a friend, your mom, anyone you care about, to tell them about a podcast that they would really love. Now think about that podcast. One that we were thinking of is our friend Phoebe Robinson's So Many White Guys, that's so with three O's. Hopefully you heard and saw Phoebe on our Oscar Night live stream. She has that podcast plus Two Dope Queens, both of them with WNYC Studios. They're wonderful. So maybe you know someone who would love those. Now think of that person. Think of how they would want to listen to Phoebe's podcast and tell them about it in real life on social media. And if they don't know how to download podcasts, now is a great time to show them. So once you do that, tell us that you recommended it with the hashtag TryPod. That's T-R-Y pod, like try podcast. And we'll thank you for spreading the word about all of the great podcasts that people in your world might love. What else?
I have to say, I think Brian Gosling is the hero we deserve in that Moonlight La La Land handoff, because his face is clearly, oh shit, and like, this is great.
I do remember seeing live Emma Stone standing in the background mouthing, oh my God, yeah. Oh my God. And I didn't know at the time, like, I just thought she was excited at the time, but you can see the panic in her eyes. I mean, how many times have you watched the video of that moment?
I literally screamed, put a sweatshirt over my head and ran to the other side of the apartment when it was happening because it was so horrifying. And now Twitter is making me relive it. It's traumatic. I can't do it. I will never watch it again.
I can't stop watching
it. It's the most embarrassing. Like, But Emma Stone mouthing, oh my God, it's seared in my brain.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Well, the audience shot of Meryl's face is my favorite, and then which we talked about on Monday, but also The Rock has since like posted that famous LA Times photo on his Instagram.
Oh my God.
Where he talks about how he would have like trampled over Meryl to put things right.
To make sure Moonlight got to give their speech.
Yeah, well, no. He was like, no one was clarifying what was happening, and I was about to run up on stage and try to make sense of it all.
Which I would have welcomed. So I said it, I think, in Slack last week that The Rock will host the Oscars within 10 years. I'm revising that to 5.
I think he'll be nominated in under 5.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
I don't know what he's going to do to
supporting get supporting role. I had sort of put it out on Twitter. I think it'll be a supporting role and he'll be like someone at like AA or like someone's sponsor, like that kind of like, inspirational.
But like, he's not troubled. He's like the, or was like Robin Williams once. In Google Hunting. Yes, or something.
He's going to give one of those Mike Hogan snot crying speeches that Mike Hogan likes to talk about.
No, I feel like he's got to win on the charm. It's got to be like a Christoph Waltz. Like, he doesn't have to be a bad guy.
I think Robin Williams and Good Will Hunting is exactly the right thing I'm thinking of. It's like a therapeutic kind of supportive, supporting role.
It's not your fault.
Yeah, so someone's got to write it. Yeah. They're remaking Good Will Hunting 20 years later.
I mean, when it's sang on stage, when he's like, they didn't invite me to sing, but I'm just going to sing anyway. I was like, go for it, Rock. Yeah. Just like sing all of Moana if you want to. I know.
We should talk about the, so the ratings for this particular telecast were quite low.
9-year low. What was 9 years ago? That was No Country for Old Men year, I guess.
Mm. Yeah, there are two factors that people are talking about. One is host, because like apparently it was ABC who really wanted Jimmy Kimmel, you know, as their own sort of like cross promotional, this is our late night host. I saw some like Oscar pundits, whoever, talking about how they'll get a higher profile star to host next year. Like it's not going to be Kimmel. So it could be someone like The Rock or like Hugh Jackman, you know what I mean? Like to get someone with star quality to host.
Is Hugh Jackman more famous than Jimmy Kimmel at this point? I mean, I guess he's famous.
No, I don't mean next year. I just mean when Jackman hosted.
I see, an example
of like an A-list actor or B, whatever you want to call Hugh Jackman.
Yeah.
I think they're going to have Jordan Horowitz do it. Great idea.
With Ryan Gosling.
Yeah. I mean, I thought Kimmel was great, but you know, it's true that like maybe The Rock hosting would put more butts in front of the TVs. And then the other, you know, obviously thing that people always talk about is like put more audience friendly films in contention. And so nominate Deadpool. And I'm just like, please don't nominate Deadpool just so more people will watch.
So are Deadpool fans going to tune into the Oscars like to see if it's win? I don't know.
Yeah,
I just think it's a total losing battle. Like it's never, you're never going to get the ratings you got for Titanic. Yeah,
the
world
ratings
is completely
are
different.
Keep going down.
And
they might
cares?
Even not even, this whole television broadcast might not even exist in
it'll be a
years.
Live stream or hosted by The Rock.
So they
fine.
Should just be maximizing the, you know, experience of it across all platforms and stop worrying so much about the ratings.
You know, like cable has done for years and the CW does, start focusing on the value of the viewer, like what kind of viewers do you have? And you still have a good number of, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got a huge chunk of the kind of sophisticated, educated, you know, people in
plugged
this country
in people,
and all around the world watching, you know.
They had a massive Rolex ad. Clearly the advertisers are figured it out that like they'll pay to get to this specific audience who isn't the Deadpool fans. They don't want the Deadpool fans.
I don't want to throw in the towel, but like, it's just, don't dilute what the Oscars is just to get to prop up a number that is going down.
Yeah, I mean, if our live stream got as many viewers as it did after the Oscars, like clearly the engagement on Twitter and Facebook and God knows what else. I mean, Joanna, you watched the audience cams, which apparently are fascinating.
Oh my God, but please, Academy, if you're listening to this, and of course you are, get someone else to host your live stream next year. I'm sorry that I don't know his name, but there's one guy who like knew plenty about movies and like is a professional at this. And then they got the guy who plays Barry on the Goldbergs, who's great on the Goldbergs, but like had nothing to say about
the
Oscars.
Some bad ABC synergy at work there.
Except to say, that's awesome. Like literally said that 100 times. So yeah, get someone else from the Goldbergs. Get Wendy. get someone else.
Who would be like the best choice for host next year, do you think? I'm going with what a friend told me. My friend Sarah said Kevin Hart. And maybe with Dwayne Johnson, like the two of them.
Didn't they host the MTV Movie Awards?
Yeah, they did.
And Kevin Hart is the most successful comedian working right now. That feels like it would make sense.
Do you feel like he'd be right for the vibe of the Oscars? I don't know much about his stand-up,
Is
honestly.
Anybody... I mean, is Kimmel right for the vibe? You know,
I don't know.
You know, like,
I just thought Kimmel did a really good job with like the stuntiness versus
he was good.
Making
he was
awards.
Good. But I feel like he wasn't... Like, I think Kevin Hart, among other things, is very lively. And I think that might be fun. So that was just what a friend said, and I kind of agree with her.
Yeah.
But do you guys have any other...
I assume
like,
they ask Meryl every year, and every year she's like, no. I don't want that
she
job.
Could sing. She could, yeah, she could
No, she would be great. But I think she just has other things to do.
That was another interesting thing about the Hollywood Reporter article that came out this morning, was that in the wake of the Hindenburg, that it might be harder to get actors to present at the Oscars because they don't want to be involved in that kind of shit show.
Although I think Faye Dunaway enjoyed it.
Yeah, Faye Dunaway had a blast. She's literally more talked about on internet than she has
been. It's the biggest thing since Mommy Dearest. I mean,
I don't know. I feel like the pros really outweigh the cons. Like the odds of you doing that, especially since they're going to put God knows how many fail safes in place. I don't know.
If there's going to be like a little red, you know, like beat, like
you
dot.
Be shot if you say the wrong thing.
Yeah. But you have people like Jennifer Lawrence that they like obviously want to have at every ceremony, and if they could have conceivably nominated her for Passengers, they would have. Or like Ryan Gosling or like Leonardo DiCaprio, who just don't want to go to the Oscars if they can help it. It seems like. Like Leo, I'm just saying that because he did the thing that he did at the Golden Globes, exactly, which is just sneak in the back door,
present
the award to Emma, and then leave.
Yeah.
And that's it, you know? So, like, there's plenty of A-listers in Hollywood that, like, don't want to be part of the Oscar circus.
Yeah, but, I mean...
If they're not nominated, you know?
Presenters were... You know, like Salma Hayek's probably always going to be game to present an award.
There are also a lot of actors who don't want to be part of the Oscar circus, but who nonetheless listen to their publicists.
Yes.
You know,
like, yes, they do.
Wait, so speaking of this, Page Six, have you guys seen this? Is now saying that Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway were fighting in the whole lead up.
I heard
he wouldn't allow them to film their rehearsal.
the blame game is spiraling.
Well, Rebecca Keegan was in there for rehearsals, and she, along with the rest of the press, were not allowed to watch them rehearse. So,
Ryan Murphy got a feud.
Oh my God,
we got a feud.
I'd like Ryan Murphy to host.
I want Ryan Murphy to produce and direct and like, create a really
and
weird
like,
game.
And Jessica Lange like, host in character Lange.
And
Joe
it's
Crawford.
All like gothic and weird. Like, welcome to the Oscars.
Sarah Paulson could be...
totally.
Yeah, Sarah Paulson would be a great Oscar host, actually.
Shirtless young men handing out the awards.
I don't think Sarah's very like loose and shoot from the hip sort of thing. I was trying to think of like who I've seen on panels, because panels are a good indication of, can you just stand up there in the face of silliness and be very entertaining. I would put my dark horse out there for Gwendolyn Christie of Game of Thrones, always loopy and weird and entertaining.
That'll bring in the viewers.
How about Gwendolyn and Kevin Hart? Clearly,
how about Gwendolyn and Aziz Ansari together?
Oh, there you go.
Well, Gwendolyn and Kevin
Hart,
you can
too.
Get Kevin Hart if you're going to do that. Like, be a real contrast there.
This is it, Gwendolyn Christie and Kevin Hart. I think we've workshopped this to perfection.
You heard it here first.
I hope the ghost of Gil Cates is listening to this
and a Bob Bob Hope hologram.
So obviously we're not taking an off season this year. We'll be back. But, you know, just to close this out, like, what's the next movie to look forward to?
I know exactly what it is.
What is it?
The Lost City of Z.
Oh, yeah. That's really
soon,
isn't
it? Coming out in April. I saw it at New York Film Festival. It's a James Gray movie. Who I've never really taken to before, but this, it's beautiful. It's a really great movie.
When is it coming out?
Early April, I think.
Well, I still haven't seen Get Out, so clearly that's my first step.
Personal Shopper is out in theaters.
That's
true. Wonderful.
The fact that Get Out was the number one movie of the weekend by a black director about white privilege the same weekend that Moonlight won Best Picture is pretty cool. Like, yeah. That's a really interesting benchmark.
Yeah.
I kind of think that if Get Out had come out later, like, I'm worried that it's not going to be even close to being in Oscar contention, but like, if Get Out had come out at the end of the year, I feel like it might have even gotten like a screenplay or something like that.
You never know. We'll do our bold predictions next week and we can all just go hard on Get Out.
I'm going to put a bid in for Logan, which comes out this Friday. And, you know, a lot of people are being hyperbolic about it. I think it's a truly great film. And I know that, like, there was this whole thing of Deadpool maybe being in the Oscar contention this year. And people are like, ugh, please. But Logan, I think people would take that more seriously as a potential Oscar contender. Maybe my research is terrible, but I think there hasn't been a superhero film, not even The Dark Knight, that was nominated for Best Picture. Am I wrong?
No.
I think this would be the first superhero
Definitely
film.
Definitely not.
Well, I think also the thing about Logan, and I have a review up on the site if people want to read it, is that Hugh Jackman, you know, this is his ninth outing, I think, as Wolverine.
Holy cow.
And he's so good. And it's a genuinely great performance in this movie.
Yeah.
And you forget that he is such a good actor. He's not just like a charismatic guy. He's like actually like a real, you know, technician.
Yeah. And there are all these references to Shane. So it like the classic Western Shane. So it gives it this extra patina of like respectability. Mm-hmm. And James Mangold is a great director. I mean, it's a really, really good film.
That's an interesting best actor campaign to start predicting now. You can totally see something like that.
I would say Charlie Hunnam for Lost City of Z, an actor who I've never really liked before. And then he just blew me away.
It's out April 14th.
April 14th, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, there is good stuff coming. I mean, we're...
And then Smurfs The Lost Village, which if that's not this year's Trolls, what is?
I don't know. Does JT have a tap dancing number? Like, you know?
Still like that song, guys. Standing by it. Still like it. Mike, are you just going to put your head in like a dark room?
Yeah, I can't even think about movies. Don't.
Well,
please. You're triggering me right now.
Well, we'll all be watching Feud for 8 or 10 weeks in the meantime. Well, that does it for today's episode. We'll be back next week to do the insane thing and start predicting next year's Oscar winners and look back at our predictions from March of 2016 about this year. So get ready for some embarrassment.
I took a brief look. We got some things wrong. I'm just gonna say that.
Well, look forward to that bit of public accountability.
The Light Between Oceans.
That was actually featured pretty prominently, which is mortifying in retrospect.
In the meantime, again, we loved hearing from you guys in the Little Gold Men Twitter feed. Obviously, there's a lot less drama in the weeks to come, but please keep talking to us. It's really fun. We're all on Twitter on our own. I'm at Katie Rich. Richard.
Rylaws.
Joanna.
Joe wrote this.
And Mike.
Mike Hogan with an underscore.
There you go.
You have to figure out where the underscore is.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening. This episode was edited and produced by Alana Milner, and thanks to Laura Mayer and Andy Bowers at Panoply. And this week's award for the best excuse for why our predictions from the Toronto Film Festival were so inaccurate goes to Richard Lawson.
Oh, your love of Canadian music has undone you once again.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.